also had a 15 minute. Mine was like 12 minutes, actually.
Yeah. Did you set a timer for it or no?
No, you know those naps are just sleeps where you're like, you're sleeping, but you kind of are like aware of your surroundings where you're not like fully in the deep sleep. So it was one of those where I was aware that I was like somewhat in a trance, but I could tell kind of sort of how much time was going by, which I think it's not better. You know, I love the sleep where you're just knocked out. Don't even wake up. Don't even know where you are.
That's
but
the best.
In terms of like a schedule and things that I had to get done this evening, I was happy that I didn't wake up like an hour and a half.
Yeah, that's always the worst when you wake up and you're like, oh shit, it's 2 hours later. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had sleep paralysis?
No.
Oh my God. I've had that happen to me like entirely too frequently for my liking. Really ever is too often, but I feel like it happens to me kind of often. But it typically happens if I'm taking a nap and it's like during the day and it's really light around me. So I end up, I'm like on my back and I'm awake and I'm like trying to get up, but I can't move. And I'm aware that I'm sleeping and can't move. But it's like this.
That sounds terrible.
It is terrible. It's extremely terrifying. Actually, you know what? That happened the last time it happened to me was when I was watching Sunny. I took a I took a daytime snooze and the light was great. I had your blinds open.
Yeah, you love to raise those blinds real high. I never raise them that high.
Oh man, I want all of the daylight.
they're great windows.
They're fantastic windows for sure. So I had those open and I'm like trying to get up and I was like, oh fuck, I'm having fucking sleep paralysis. So I just have to lay there until my body like wakes up and lets me move. It's the worst.
Yeah, that doesn't sound fun. No, I've never had that. I am a heavy ass sleeper. I can sleep through loud noises. I could sleep through light. I could really, it's tough to like, I just love sleep so much. It's knock on wood. I'm very thankful because there's people that like are either light sleepers or move around a bunch or like can't ever get comfortable or like have anxiety sleeping. I feel bad for folks like you. Like I'm not a big nap guy though. Like I really try to put off as long as I can. Like that moment of the euphoric feeling of getting in bed at night under the covers is just
fabulous.
It's fantastic.
Do you still sleep in a weird fetal ball position?
Pillow under legs, curled up.
Yep. Yeah, okay. That's what I thought.
I think that's why part of my posture is so bad.
Now that you're talking about posture,
also because I sit like
I'm sitting here hunched over, and I'm like, oh, maybe I should sit up straight. Oh man, it's so bad. I sit so hunched over all day.
Oh, so hunched over. I'm so nervous for when I'm older. Same. I feel like I'm going to be that old ass man that can't lift his head up. There's just one old lady in my church, and I haven't gone to church consistently since maybe like the 7th or 8th grade. But I remember so vividly this old ass woman, which shows you like how peculiar and unique she was. Her neck was like literally so far down all the time. Like she couldn't lift it up. Like when she would go up for communion, like she would walk with her head down. They would have to put it in. She would have like lift her hands up to to her mouth. And obviously that I have no idea what caused that. Maybe it was an accident or something, but I've seen people around Philly that are like older and can't lift their head or neck up very much. And I have to imagine that if you have such bad posture for so long, your spine can just get like kind of stuck. And I feel sometimes where I'm like, oh my God, my spine's like crooked already at 28. It's very terrifying.
It is. One time I got
I just can't sit like
an MRI on my back and they were like, oh, this is, you know, and it's relatively fine. But even some of the things they were saying, I was like, what the fuck? I was like, my back is fucked up. What's going on?
And the back is one thing you do not want to fuck with. Like, that's where all your fucking nerves are.
You don't
want to
fuck your back. You don't want to fuck any joint. Joints suck.
I don't know if you believe in, like, the chiropractor videos you see, like, all that cracking. Like, that shit scares the fuck out of me.
No, I mean, I'm sure it feels nice momentarily. Just like a release, you know? But I feel like I stretch enough to like get the relief that I need. I also use like foam rollers and whatnot and like deep tissue massage stuff. And I do occasionally get massages because they are fucking awesome. Are you a massage guy?
I would really like to become one. I would like to like meet a massage therapist or somebody that I can go to consistently. Mm-hmm.
You just want to like meet one on the street. Like you're not going to go somewhere and try and like, you're like, I like this person. I'm going to do this.
I just like, don't know. Like some, like there's a stigma around massage parlors, whether you believe it or not, there is, mm-hmm. where like some are too fancy and like they're not, you know, they're expensive and they're trying too hard and it's not really like a good experience.
Yeah.
Some are on the flip side where it's a little dirty and so I would love, I just don't know how to like find that in between where there's like, it's not crazy expensive. It's a nice 45 to 70 minute massage. Somebody that can just work on all parts of, from honest to God, like neck down to ass would be fantastic.
Oh yeah.
Like right before it got like to Deshaun Watson territory.
Yeah. I have a name of a massage therapist that I can send you.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah. I liked, she was good. She was good. I very much enjoyed my massage. Go to my gym actually has a, they have like a spa. So I typically will go there just because it's convenient.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. I would love to get a really good one before the summer. I'm also, I don't know if massage parlors do this, but
I think it's hilarious that you call it a massage parlor.
What are they called?
I don't know. A massage studio?
Something like a massage studio.
All right. Well, call whatever the fuck you want. I just don't think they're called massage parlors anymore. I think that's very specific to the sexual massage experience.
Well, like I said, I'm looking for a massage parlor. joking. But either way, I have fully committed for this summer. I would like to get my chest and my back waxed for the first time.
Have you gotten anything waxed ever?
No. Mm-mm. I believe back hair is repugnant and I don't even have that much of it, but I have like a little bit on my lower back and I hate it. And then the chest, it just grows so fast. Like I'm fucking shaving it. It feels like all the time. And I would just love to get it waxed for the summer and just fucking not have to worry about it.
You know, you have to do that like every 3 weeks, right?
Waxing?
Yeah.
I thought it like helped your hair stay away for like ever.
No.
Well, I shave every 3 weeks. What the fuck is the difference?
It might last 4 or 5 weeks, but still. It only gives you an extra few weeks. It does pull the hair out at the root, so it grows back slower, but it's not... It
sounds so painful.
Yeah, it doesn't feel great.
But yeah, I made my decision. I'm going
to
do it.
Okay, well, just know that you're going to have to keep up with it. And make sure that when you go to the same person each time. Because if you see different people that are doing waxing... some of them pull it differently and you want it to all be pulled the same, like in the same direction the whole time. That way you don't get like irritation.
Thank you for the
tip. You're welcome.
Well, this is Roll the Credits. I know it doesn't sound like it, but it is. This is episode 120 of our film podcast. And if you guys are continuing listeners of ours, you know that this past weekend was what I would consider and most would consider the Super Bowl of Hollywood, the end of the year festivities, the big bash. Of course, it was 2023, the 95th Academy Awards ceremony. And we just wanted to go through a rapid fire, our thoughts, our favorite parts, our favorite moments, our biggest disappointments, whatever it may be, of the night, which... I think we both have always loved the Oscars. I completed a ballot this year. I got 17 of 23 correct when it came to the predictions. I thought the show was great. I thought my overall opinions on it were It didn't feel like 3.5 hours.
No, it did not.
I enjoyed the song performances throughout. I liked, they got some great presenters, Emily Blunt, The Rock, Harrison Ford, Jessica Chastain. They had a lot of really good presenters. And Jimmy Kimmel was okay. But, you know, they touched on the slap heard around the world, of course, yes, which I expected they would.
Maybe about four.
There was
five
a couple
times.
Funny ones. Yeah, I think it was five. And I think I liked two of them. But yeah, overall, I thought the night was really fun. Just from a high level overview of the evening.
I would say that my favorite moment was when what was his name?
Kihi Kwan.
Yeah. That and when he went up and hugged Harrison Ford. That was the fucking cutest thing I've ever seen in my life.
He's like a hug of a
human. He's so infectious, and you can just see that through all of it. I mean, I think his story's amazing. I think he's an amazing human being. I think, oh my God, I think Michelle Yeoh winning and being like, yeah, I'm going to take this to my mom. That's fucking awesome. Jamie Lee Curtis winning and being like, both of my parents were nominated. They never won. I've been nominated. Like, this is amazing. Like, that's so cool. The history, the legacy, and all of that. And, you know, that's usually what my favorite part ends up being. But yeah, those were, I know that was like three highlights, but those were my highlights.
Yeah, I think for me, I obviously have Ki Kwan's speech. You know, he's just so happy. Everyone knew he was obviously going to win. Yeah. I'm sure he even probably at that point knew he was going to win, but he was just such genuine joy up there. Mm-hmm. And you saw clips throughout the night of him fanboying over meeting certain people.
Oh my
people.
God, that
it's
was
just
the
like,
best. He's just so
you don't
to
see
earth.
That in the industry. No. I also love Brendan Fraser's speech, although his emotion is different. His emotion makes me anxious. He has a tough time breathing when he's
It was like
anxious,
he was acting
in
the whale.
Yeah, 100%. And then my low key dark horse moment of the night was actually when Natu Natu won original song and his acceptance speech. He started singing.
Oh my God,
that was
so
actually
cool.
Fantastic.
That was.
Which I really enjoyed. And then looking at it, there wasn't many disappointments. Listen, Everything Everywhere All at Once wasn't for me. I went into the evening understanding that they were going to win a big chunk of the major categories. Mm-hmm. The only one was Best Actor, Lead Actor, and I would have been okay if Austin Butler won. I thought he was at worst equally deserving, which we talked about off air. It's a bummer that a performance like that doesn't win, truly, because they're both great, you know, and I think the Academy would never, I think, admit to it, but Brendan Fraser's story of the arc of redemption and comeback in the industry definitely has something to do. The people that are voting are human. It is what it is. But for me, this is not just me being a Babylon fanboy. Truly, I promise, as I say this, they should have won Best Score.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree.
That's fine if you don't like the movie. I understand it's not for everybody. I know people are going to love it or going to hate it. I could get behind them not being nominated for any major acting categories, although I thought Margot definitely deserved it. But Best Score, that score was just so fucking good.
It was amazing.
And so memorable and so catchy and so perfect for the moments that
I listen to it all the time. Like when I'm working in the middle of the day, I'm like, I need a little something to get me going.
It gets you going.
It does.
Yeah.
And I put that on. Specifically, Call Manning.
I'm not trying to take anything away from All Quiet. It's also a great score. It was a big part of the
film.
Yeah,
but meh.
I don't know how it does.
It wasn't as exciting. It wasn't exciting. That's all. That was great. So that was also my biggest letdown of the show, too. I'm glad we had the same letdown. But yeah, no, I can't think of any other things that I was like, eh.
There was no big surprise.
No, there weren't.
I think
it was
all
pretty predictable.
You picked Austin Butler probably because you wanted Austin Butler to win more than you actually thought.
Yeah, I truly did not believe that he was actually going to win, but I did. I was like, I got a ride for this man, so I rode for him, and I died, but that's okay.
It's okay. He got his BAFTA. Yeah, but other than that, I thought it was good. I mean, it was up 18% of viewership from last year.
Yeah, so, but everyone wanted to see another slap.
I also think it's interesting that it did so well in a year where not a lot of the big stars were there, right? I mean,
I agree.
Brad Pitt's, the Leonardo DiCaprio's, the McConaughey's, like, you know, there's a ton of big quote-unquote stars that weren't there. I mean, Margot was presenting. You had some big stars presenting. But the winners, I wouldn't consider them A-plus list superstars. It wasn't a year for A-plus list superstars to be nominated for Best Picture or Best acting roles outside of maybe Kate Blanchett.
I kind of feel like that's just showing how much the industry is changing. It does. You don't have to be an A-list actor to get that nomination, which is cool. Seems like you have to be white. But it's just, there's just like, I think movies are really changing right now. And it's really cool to see that. And I feel as if I'm having trouble putting words to it, obviously, as I'm sitting here rambling and using all of these placeholders. But the industry is changing so much, and I think it's being recognized. And I think there's just like a lot more representation, and it's not just classic Hollywood anymore, which I love classic Hollywood, don't get me wrong. But I like to see that it is expanding and is becoming more inclusive of really just all films that have been made. Because I do think that there are a lot of films that kind of go under the radar solely because, I mean, typically it happens because of money. And a lot of times those films are equally deserving of awards, and the actors and actresses in those films are equally deserving as well. But yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, I was happy with it. I thought the award season was what it was, right? There was a couple of really cool moments with Kiki Quinn and Brendan Fraser and you know, all of those folks that were newer or back on the scene, if you will. But I believe next year is going to be a big year for the superstars again. Leonardo DiCaprio came out today, actually, saying that he thinks the film that he's in, you know, that everyone is looking forward to, Killers of the Flower Moon, that is directed by Martin Scorsese, which also has Brendan Fraser in it, Robert De Niro. He said he thinks it's a masterpiece.
Wow.
And if you know Leo, he doesn't ever talk on his films like that, ever, truly. And he's obviously been in some of the best movies of all time, some of the best performances of all time. If you go back and look at it when he's doing like pre-press or whatever, he's never like, oh yeah, I think this is like movie of the year. Like, he doesn't talk like that. So for him to say that is exciting, very exciting, especially being directed by Scorsese, a runtime of like 340, I think it's at right now.
Kill me.
So I am excited. It's apparently a true story that not a lot of people knew about, a dark true story.
I'm all in.
Yeah, and there's some great, obviously, Oppenheimer. A lot of people are looking forward to Barbie. A lot of people are looking forward to Air. There's a lot of films with big actors and actresses and directors that are going to be coming out this year. So I think 2024 Oscars, you know, should have the representation of a lot of those, again, in quotations, A-list superstars. Because, as you mentioned, Tina, we're unfortunately, as we see in sports, we're seeing it in Hollywood as well, we're at the tail end of a lot of the actors and actresses that we grew up loving and coming to know as that Hollywood, you know, kind of.
And I was just going to mention that. I mean, like Brad Pitt, Matthew McConaughey, Leonardo DiCaprio, they're all getting up there. They're all getting up there.
You're even seeing folks.
Shit, soon enough, they're going to be Harrison Ford.
Yeah, even though he's still fucking crushing
it. He is, yeah. I do hope they all crush it into later in life, but, you know, you never know.
Okay, well, we should get into what I think is somebody that is technically up and coming. He's been in a lot of great stuff. He really made his mark, I think, on the industry in Star Wars. That, to me, is probably where a lot of people know him from. Not me, because I don't think you either, because we're not really Star Wars people. But, you know, that's
I have not seen Star Wars.
However, he really stepped away from, you know, kind of the franchise type of films with his role in Marriage Story, which was nominated for an Oscar. People were really looking forward to House of Gucci, which didn't do as well as he probably thought, but I still think that it was a big film for him. And he is starring in his newly released dinosaur epic film 65, which just came out in theaters recently. Fortunately, it's not doing very well, which to me, it's a very tough genre to go up against Jurassic Park. You know, you can't really do that. And even Jurassic Park has struggled in recent years at creating audience accepted and critic accepted roles. But we're, of course, talking about Adam Driver, and we're going to dive right into him here on episode 120. And Tina, I'll let you talk about what you watched, and you can kind of get right into it.
All right. I watched a movie from, I forgot to write the year down. I'm so sorry. It's so unprofessional of me. 2013, called Trax. And Trax is actually based on a true story of a woman named Robin Davidson, who decided in 1977 at the age of 27 that she was going to cross Australia from Alice Springs all the way to the Indian Ocean, which meant she's crossing over the desert. She's in some pretty treacherous terrain. And it's starring Mia Wasikowska. So I don't know if that's how you pronounce her name, and Adam Driver. And she's doing this 1,677-mile journey. Wow. I don't know how long it actually takes her. They probably said that at the end of the movie, like little like writing parts of the credits or whatever. I just can't remember it. But it was a very like, it was kind of a slower movie, but it was like deeply emotional. And it, you know, is tracking her journey that she's on. And she's on this journey, you know, you got the backstory of her, some things that happened in her life. And she decides she's going to go find herself. And that's how she chooses to find herself. So before she leaves, she needs to get some camels to carry all of her stuff across the desert. So she agrees, she does a contract with some man and learns like how to train camels and whatever, and does it in exchange for work, and then like gets some camels at the end of it. So she acquires 4 camels and takes her dog with her. And before she leaves, her friend and a couple of her friend's friends come by. And one of them is Adam Driver, who plays a guy named Rick. And Rick's a photographer for Nat Geo. And he's like, oh, you should like totally get like, you know, a major magazine to sponsor your trip, whatever, yada, yada. And he's like, I know a lot of people, like I can put in a good word. And she's like, no, it's fine. Like, he's this very like, he's just overeager. He talks a lot. He talks incessantly, and he talks quickly and doesn't really allow for anybody else to get a word in. So she's like, no, it's fine. Like, I'll do it myself, whatever. So she does. She writes to Nat Geo, and National Geographic hits her back, and they're like, hey, we'll absolutely sponsor your trip. In return, you're going to have to allow a photographer to go with you. So the photographer shows up. Of course, it's Rick. And she's like a little bit bummed out because it is Rick, and she's like, oh, maybe I didn't really get this on my own kind of thing, which is sort of what the point of all this is. And Rick keeps like trying to like pop in different ways to be helpful, but like he's not being helpful. Mm-hmm. He's just being fucking annoying and rude and like just kind of clueless about a lot of things. So he meets her every like 5 weeks or so to like take pictures or whatever and, you know, get what he needs for the magazine. And, you know, he's always like, oh, pose, you know, in certain ways, that type of deal. And she's like, can you just take the fucking picture? Like, why do you have to get me to put, like, find the perfect angle, get the shot yourself rather than having me like move around and be the shot, you know? But anyways, it's just about her journey and in her interactions with him, and you know how throughout it they have ups and downs, and she specifically has a lot of ups and downs. I'm not gonna really say much else because, again, it's a slower movie and like a lot does happen in it, but if I say more of what happens in it, like, it's just gonna kind of ruin it. So I'm gonna leave it at that, because I did like it and I would recommend watching it, if that's like your kind of jam. Rating. So IMDb gave it a 7.1. Rotten Tomatoes gave it an 82%. Gave it a flat 7. One of my favorite scores to give.
Your favorite score to give, for sure.
I really like the flat 7s and the flat 8s. Yeah, you know, it was beautifully shot. Beautifully shot. The acting was fantastic. They had a lot of different people come in that, you know, were very small parts. Like, you know, tourists show up at certain points and, like, paparazzis catch wind of what she's doing. So, like, all these magazine photographers show up. And, again, it's 1977, so world's different, but not that different. So it was really cool. And, you know, the insights that she had and kind of, like, her little, like, soliloquies, if you will, throughout the movie were very moving. But my question to you is, you are going on this like spiritual finding yourself kind of journey. What's your journey? Like, what are you doing? Like, money doesn't matter. Nothing matters. Like, you don't have to take anything else into consideration. You're going on your finding yourself spiritual come to Jesus moment journey thing, whatever. Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
I think for me, a lot of it would be tied to wildlife and animals. I actually follow National Geographic. Me and my dad used to get them growing up. Well, not when my dad was growing up. When I was growing up. Used to get the magazines that look at them together. I think we know so little about, like, or at least like the common man knows so little about wildlife and all these different creatures out there and seeing them in their own habitat. Mm-hmm. I would just be so happy to travel the world with someone who knew. Like, I would need a guide. I would want a guide.
Yeah.
Not an annoying guide or, you know, anything like that, but someone that could bring me around to different continents, to different habitats, to different locations, and I could just kind of experience the culture and meet the people and live life among them, honestly. Mm-hmm. If you guys have read Green Lights, which obviously we talked about here, the stuff that McConaughey did in his early to mid to late 20s, where he was just fucking running through jungles and wrestling these fucking people of different cultures and drinking their wine and eating their food and tangling with, you know, all of these different, you know, animals, that to me is just something that I think could open my eyes so much. I've talked about it here before, but I went on a trip back in the day when I was, you know, the only really Europe excursion I've had was seeing four different places in 11 days or whatever it was. And, you know, Amsterdam and Rome and Paris were fun, but they were similar, right? Those are cities. Yeah. Those are in one way or another, similar to the way that we live our life. But then I also went to Venice and that was not similar. Mm-hmm. And just seeing the culture and the food and the people and the lack of technology and the mode of transportation and all of these different ways that they live changed my outlook on how, one, spoiled we are in the United States, two, how we ruin everything in the United States, three, how wasteful we are in the United States. I would love to be untethered for 12 to 18 months.
Yeah.
And go to Australia, go to New Zealand, go to China, go to Mongolia, go to Africa, go to South America, and just experience the way that they live at chunks of time. Mm-hmm. And again, have a guide that can explain things to me, keep me safe, show me the ropes. But that would be just I would have to imagine that would change the way that I have outlook on life forever, I think.
For sure.
And I think it would be incredible for the soul. However, life doesn't work that way. Money is involved and daily responsibilities and all that are real things. All
right. But you don't need to rain on it after you said it. Come on.
If I had my way, that would be my my coming to you know, kind of finding my soul search.
Yeah. Yeah. I think mine would be very similar to that. I think I would kind of give myself a goal of visiting every country in the world. Obviously minus like North Korea, but like in general, I just would love to spend a few days in maybe like 4 to 5 days in every country in the world and like be amongst the locals, like you said, and really just kind of get an idea for their way of life, and just understand what it means to be human. I think that the U.S. is wildly unique in the sense that it's different than every other country in the world. There is, when you look at other countries, they have one similar culture for the most part. Yes, of course, you have different areas that are more heavily populated with certain ethnicities and certain races and that sort of thing. Yes, of course, there are still areas that, you know, like they're not, the other countries are not perfect. I'm not trying to say that. And I'm not, you know, like necessarily shitting on the U.S. either. But I think my biggest observation is amongst my travels that the biggest difference between the U.S. and every other country is that one overarching common culture. And I think that we kind of lack that here. And I think that a lot of other countries have much more of a collectivism kind of culture versus individualism. And I believe that, I don't know, I just don't necessarily feel like maybe it's the healthiest way to live your life. Like with that individualistic mindset. Wow, thank you so much. That was a tough one. With that mindset, like without forethought of other people. And I think that's just kind of shocking to me because I kind of think we're like the only country in the world where that is like the overarching culture.
Yeah, it's pretty sickening.
It is. It's really sad and depressing to think about. And I really try personally to live my life in a way where I create community around me and like have connections and stuff. But like, holy shit, it's so fucking easy to not do that. It's wild. But yeah, I don't know. I just want to like be in a place where people are just kind of like a little bit more like relaxed and happy and not so.
Everybody in the United States just feels so high strung, stressed out. And
yeah, it's like this.
It's because it's hard. It's hard to live in the United States. It's financially stressful. It's so many different things that for whatever reason we got in these terrible habits over the last I don't know how many ever decades. And
and
while I do think we've talked about it forever, but while I do think technology is good in a lot of ways,
social media fucked us,
disabilitating in a lot of
yeah, totally. And it's not to say that it's not hard to live in other countries. It absolutely is, but it's a different kind of hard. Like each country has their own struggles, each country has their own, you know, pros and cons, ups, downs, what have you. But I don't know. But also too, like, that's what we're seeing on vacation and that's the vibe that we're getting. And it's surely not like that 24/7, right? So like, I don't know. What's life like if you live in another country like that and you are living in that way? Like, is it actually different or are the stressors and everything still there, just they look different, you know?
Yeah, it's very possible. I've always said, like, not even when I travel outside of the U.S., if I've gone to Chicago, I've gone to Denver, I've gone to Austin, Texas. And I'm like, oh, I would love to live here. This is way better than Philly. And truthfully, it probably is. But I think you have these blinders on of like, you're in vacation mode. You're not working.
Exactly.
You're doing fun things all day, every day. Mm-hmm. But I still think that the basis of that claim, cities are cleaner, food is better, people are nicer, weather is better. Like, yeah. Those are facts.
I do believe the weather makes a difference. I so strongly believe that.
I mean, it's fucking 30 degrees and snowing today, and it was absolutely miserable outside.
Yeah, I didn't go outside solely because of that. I heard it was really cold. I could feel the cold through my windows. I said, nope, not today.
Okay, so you're locking in at a 7.0?
Yes, sir. I recommend it. I
what think was the name of the like it. What was the name Tracks? Of the film? Tracks. Tracks.
T-R-A-C-K-S. Tracks. Like okay. Camel Tracks. Okay. Get it?
Got it. Yep. All right. Well, I watched Shocker, a movie based on true life events, because that's my favorite genre. I watched a movie called The Report from 2019. This movie starred Adam Driver, John Hamm, Matthew Reese, Jennifer Morrison. But it was really Adam Driver's movie through and through. This is a true story based on the, I guess you can call it, report and inspection of the CIA and the way that they handled interrogation and torture techniques in the Middle East after 9/11. It is apparently very true, all of these things that happened. Adam Driver played a character named Daniel Jones, who worked for a senator and was tasked with leading a small workforce on building out a report on all of these truly dirty things that the CIA, sneaky things that the CIA was doing mm-hmm. after 9/11. If you don't know the history of 9/11, obviously, you know the event, but there is a lot of fingers that were pointed at the CIA, ways that they could have prevented it, intel that they had mm-hmm. that they didn't act upon, all of these things. There's many movies made about it. There's obviously many documentaries.
There's
and
a bazillion
articles
conspiracy and theories. There's
bazillion. But the truth of it is that they did miss information and intel that they had that potentially could have prevented the deadliest terroristic threat and strike that the United States has ever seen. After that happened, the CIA's ego was hurt, and they vowed to never let anything like that happen again. During this time, they brought on two people that implemented torture techniques, and obviously torture is illegal in many different constitutional acts. That included waterboarding, that included rectum hydration,
Jesus Christ. Included
sleep deprivation, mock burials, where they would put these prisoners in these casket, pretty much wooden caskets that they would build to the inch of the person's size so they could not move, fill it with insects like cockroaches and
what
ants.
What the fuck?
Play loud music, strip them of their clothes, make them wear a diaper, pour cold water on them at all parts of the day.
I do remember
all of these things,
seeing some torture stuff post 9/11.
Pretty horrible, yeah, horrible things.
I stayed away from all of that online.
So Daniel Jones was tasked in building a report to show that what the CIA did was obviously terrible and to prosecute the people that were responsible. The CIA got rid of all tapes, and obviously in FBI, CIA, high-level institutions like that, you need to document everything.
Yeah.
So there is thousands and thousands of documents and articles and all of these different things. But the videos were destroyed. Daniel Jones spent over 5 years, wrote a report of nearly 7,000 pages. Very well and clear outline of the wrongdoings that the CIA made. This movie takes you on an educational trip that shows you the corruption inside our most prominent agencies, shows you everything turns to politics,
sure
shows
does.
You what the effect of media has on things like this. And this was back in, I mean, he was working on it from 2009 to 2015. He spent nearly 6 years in a basement by himself every day for 14 hours a day, reading all these different torture techniques and reports and all of this terrible, terrible things to create this document, to then only really, without spoiling it, be threatened at every level possible. Shit. Threatened with being unconstitutional,
yeah,
being a whistleblower, being all of these things, right? And again, it shows you the scary fucking beast that is politics. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy what the CIA got away with, the things they did to people that weren't even involved in the Osama bin Laden, you know, kind of camp.
Mm-hmm.
They made it seem like they were the reason that they got to Osama bin Laden, which Daniel Jones ends up proving is potentially not true. They tortured 119 known people. They got zero new information from any of the 119 people. People died. People, obviously. There was one guy that they waterboarded 163 days in a row. So it goes through all of that. It's very historical, educational. If you don't like that stuff, it's probably boring to you. That stuff is incredibly interesting to me. And it's even more interesting personally because in some way, shape, or form, my brother is kind of involved or wants to be involved in some sense of that world, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he obviously can't tell me anything, which is incredibly annoying. But I texted him. I said, you should watch the report because I think your sneaky ass is trying to do something like this. And he said, oh, it's on my list. I'm going to watch. I said, is it because your sneaky ass boss told you to watch? Like, why are you watching mm-hmm. it? And he just said, lol. But those are my types of movies. IMDb gave it a 7.2. Rotten Tomatoes gave it an 82%. I locked it in at 7.3. It's Adam Driver's movie. And I can't exactly put my finger on Adam Driver and something that I don't want to say bugs me or irks me, but something that is different for him than it is other, you know, A-list superstars. It's just, I don't know. Maybe it's the way he talks or like he sounds super nasally all the time. I really can't focus in on it. I think he did a really good job on this film. I do. And it was enjoyable to me to learn. But it's never quite there for me that he can fully carry an entire movie.
Okay.
But yeah, that is my breakdown of the film. For me, the question to you is, on both sides of that coin, being tortured or doing the torturing, or both, I guess, how long do you think you would be able to stand? And the thing is these people didn't have anything to tell because they weren't the right people being tortured a lot of the time.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't last long at all. Oh my God. Are you kidding?
But even like on the flip side, like, I don't know if I could last long doing the torture.
No, I could never. I could never. I have a hard time just like screaming. Like, I have, like, just raising my voice to, like, yell in, like, an angry kind of way. I have a hard time doing that. Imagine me trying to, like, waterboard somebody. I could not do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, put me in a situation where my life depended on it. Yeah, sure, I could probably do it. But, like, my life doesn't depend on it. I'm not fucking going anywhere near that. In terms of being tortured, I have an abnormally high pain tolerance, but like
that's exactly
that's what I'm saying. Like, what are they gonna do? Like, are they just gonna like beat me? I could probably handle that better than what I could handle waterboarding or putting me in a coffin with
I'd tell them anything. I'd lie, but anything to get at. You put me in a coffin. Mm-mm.
I wouldn't
last long no matter what, period.
No, I wouldn't last long at all. Again, I think I might, but you can't get out. They're just going to keep doing it and doing it and doing it. So like, I don't like this conversation.
Yeah, it was tough for me to think of something. It was interesting to me, though, outside of the torturing stuff. Like, Daniel Jones worked for the senator,
mm-hmm.
who works for the United States, who works for the White House. And all of these things are tied together, yet all of these agencies are working against each other. It's just an exact example of what we talked about with your movie of, like, this friction amongst the people that are supposed to be leading our country is just,
yeah.
even back then, is wild. Like, the things they lied to President Bush about, the things they said he signed off on, these two fucking idiots that they brought in from the Air Force, they were Air Force psychologists that said they studied up on interrogation, yet they had never interrogated anybody before. There was somebody from the FBI that had interrogated many people, talked about doing rapport building and all of these things, and he was getting places with these prisoners. And then these two came in and just started beating the shit out of them, waterboarding them, fucking trying to play mind tricks. And it's just it's crazy that it all happened within, like, CIA versus FBI versus White House mm-hmm. versus Republicans versus Democrats versus this guy just trying to report the truth and him being threatened by lawsuits and going to jail and treason and all this crazy stuff. It is just nuts that could happen.
Yeah, the world's, like, super corrupt. All governments are really very corrupt. And excuse me, I don't know. I just kind of feel like all of that's going to happen no matter where we are, what point in time we're at in the world. We can try and progress away all we want from it, but I don't know. I don't know if that's cynical of me to say, if that's realistic, if that's just, I mean, it could be both. But utopia doesn't exist, and dystopia is seeming realer and realer than ever.
You know what it sounds like we need?
I think we need a good news story.
I think we do.
I think it's time for Ryan's good news story.
Switching it up on you, folks.
Yes, we are.
So Tina did good news stories for the first 119 episodes. I think it's only fair that I played my part in some good news. I'm going to do it a little different than you. Similar, obviously, good news. But I'm going to hit you with, like, three quick good news stories that I saw.
You remember that I tried that before? That was a thing, too.
Did you?
Yeah, I did do that. I did it a couple times. That's fine. Okay. I just want you to know it wasn't. Sorry. No. I'm kidding. I'm just being a dick.
Wasn't me that created it.
I'm just being an asshole.
Okay, so my first one is doctors in Boston can now prescribe patients with a debit card that can help get the patients free fruits and vegetables.
What?
The card helps people who can't afford healthy food and have illnesses tied to an unhealthy diet.
Amazing.
Love that.
That's fantastic. We need more of that shit in this world.
Next up, Spain has passed a law allowing those with especially painful periods to take a paid 3-day menstrual leave from work, a European first.
Let's fucking go.
Move to Spain.
I'm about to.
And finally, something I've actually been following closely, the trial of a 4-day working week in the UK, which is the largest of its kind in the world, revealed a significant decrease in rates of anxiety, stress, and illness among the staff who participated.
Wow, who knew?
It was an overwhelming success on all factors that they were reporting on.
Were they more productive, which, again, too? Yeah. Did they measure that?
Doesn't say, but I'd have to imagine. I mean, the feeling of working to live is something that I've always been so against.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that you should fucking, like, feel like you're just working around the clock to live your life for what? Friday night, Saturday, and then, like, getting ready
Sunday,
for the work.
Yeah. So when I was living in New York for my internship, I was a newly minted 21-year-old living with two grown-ass women that were 28 and 29, which is so funny to think about right now as I'm sitting here as a 28, almost 29-year-old. And I'm imagining I'm working with somebody at work right now, like coaching and stuff, and this person is 21 years old, and I'm just putting all of that together in my head right now, and it's unbelievable. Anyhow, I was freaking out the one day, and My one roommate at the time, Brenda, was from Ireland, and she had a great accent. She was a fantastic human being, and she was like, "You're 21, aren't you?" And I was like, "Yeah." She was like, She was like, "What the fuck are you doing? You're fine." And she was like, "I don't understand you Americans. You guys live to work, whereas I work to live." And I was like, "Huh." So the first time I heard that was me during a meltdown about what I'm doing with my life. And I'm like, okay, she's like kind of right, whatever. And Jesus fucking Christ, Brenda nailed the goddamn nail. She nailed it. She fucking nailed
never
it.
That serious.
No.
95% of people, their job, it's never that serious, right? No. Obviously, doctors, police officers.
Honestly, but, though, here's the thing. I was talking about that with a group of friends today, and my one friend is a physician's assistant, and she deadass goes, "Honestly, my job's not that important. Everything that I did today, I could have done virtually." I was like, fuck.
All really? Right.
Yeah. I was like, cool. Everything's just a fucking scam. Everything's it's a true. Fucking they scam. Make you
the corporate world makes you really try to believe that, like, everything's so important. Your job is so
it's fucking you not.
Literally fucking.
It's only important because they say it's. Well, anyways.
We live in a capitalistic world. This is good news story. We're not supposed to.
Yeah, let's go to the wheel.
Alrighty. Let's go to the wheel.
Of fortune.
Of the wheel of actors. And of course it lands on a line.
Dude, it always lands on a line. How do we make that not happen?
What?
I said it always lands on a line. How do we make that not happen?
I kind of like it, though.
Why?
I don't like when it does it two times in a row.
It's
like
inefficient.
That was between Don Cheadle and Gene Smart. I can't imagine it does it three times in a row, so let's see who we get. Oh, get there. Get there. Get there. Yeah! Yes! People say I look like him. People love him.
You don't fucking look like Miles Teller.
I do look like Miles Teller. People have told
you
me
wish
that
you
before.
Look like Miles Teller.
I wish I looked like Miles Teller on that beach scene.
Oh my Man. God.
The great, the wonderful, the super Philadelphia actor that is Miles Teller is who we'll be looking into. He stars in my favorite movie. I've said it on here 100 times.
Top Gun Maverick.
Nope, that's your favorite movie. honestly, I don't know if there's anything I haven't seen that he's in.
Well,
truly, he's up. He's a top three favorite actor for me.
We about to find out.
Well, we are about to find out. All right, well, that does it for this episode of Roll the Credits. This was episode 120 with Adam Driver. We're on regular scheduled programming for now. We will, of course, have our end of the month Final Cut Friday episode in a couple of weeks, but until then, we will be on regular Wednesday releases, and we will see you next week with Miles Teller, and as always, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Tina.
All right, guys. Take it all in. Try not to be too stressed, and enjoy life as much as you can, and we'll be back here next week with Miles Teller.